Scrolling on screen text. business.gov.nl. Text on screen. Running your business in the Netherlands.
Your business in the Netherlands is up and running and even growing. Congratulations. All that hard work is paying off. Now you're ready for the next steps. But what does that mean? Will you be hiring staff for the first time? Do you need to relocate? Is the legal structure you've chosen still the right one for your company? What about taxes? And how to manage other business processes with a view to growth? Do you have enough money for your future plans? There are many questions, more than can be answered in 1 hour. That's why we have our chat team in place. You can pose your question through the chat function below your video screen. We'll make sure you receive a response, if not during this webinar, then soon afterwards. We will focus on 4 main topics in this webinar for entrepreneurs in the growing phase of their business: legal structure, taxes, staff, and financing. We will discuss these topics with Johan Laffler, business consultant with the Netherlands Chamber of Commerce, and entrepreneurs Karim Sabri, founder and CEO of the platform Expat Republic, and Geeta Rashuk, founder and CEO of Babymoon. Welcome.
Text on screen. Running your business. Growth plans.
Johan, to start it off with you, for entrepreneurs, when they start in general and have just kicked off their business, what in general should they be mindful of?
I think it's a lot of things that you need to be mindful for once you actually start the business. There's all kinds of processes that you need to work with. You need to know where you're going. You need to keep your eye in the direction that you want to go with your business, but you need to set everything in place and in motion. I think that's the most important step. Get your clients, get your paperwork up and running, and start going in the direction where you want to go.
And what type of aspects come running with that, setting your business and getting the legal work done?
Getting the legal work, well, I think the most important one is setting up your taxes. So at that point, get your money streams in order. I think for most startup companies, that's the most important part. But once that's taken care of, then it's going to be doing the actual business, getting out there, get your name known, get your clients, and start doing what it is that you're good at doing.
Great. So these are all aspects that we will just zoom in later on in this webinar. First, let's meet our entrepreneurs. Welcome to both of you. And Geeta, to start off with you, you have founded a really special company around a special baby product, special baby carriers for especially small babies, if I remember correctly. Yeah. Could you elaborate?
It is a pretty niche business. We're looking at really changing the care approach to newborns, but to children actually in their first 1,000 days of life. It's all evidence-based, and it started around a baby carrier, but it's actually a much larger angle towards what we're doing. But
maybe to explain it a bit more, we can watch this video you made.
Yeah, I think that would be easier for people to understand.
Hi, I am Geeta. I am founder of Babymoon Care, and we are working to change infant care to an attachment model all over the world. I started as an entrepreneur overall in baby carriers. It was 2006, I had my first son, so I started wearing my son. I was in love with the concept of that, and like step by step I would figure out all the benefits it brought to me. 2006 up till 2010, I was just making baby carriers. I wanted to not do the business, but then the world told me, like, no, we need you to do this. That's when I started working with the maternity hospitals in Moldova and like working more on a system of care rather than just a device. Babymoon is actually a much more complex system than just a carrier company. Well, I come from Moldova. I am in the Netherlands since 2016. Since then, there was a lot of groundwork covered. And now we're working in the Scandinavian region, in Benelux. And we have a big important project coming up with Tanzania, Kenya, and that's done together with the United Nations. So we have a lot of stuff going on. back at the time when I came up with the concept, for me this was just fiction, and then here I am in the Netherlands, and here I am connected by the Dutch entrepreneurial environment to the United Nations, and here I am making that fiction that I came up with 4 years ago a reality. So that's mind-blowing to myself even. But aside from connections like this, you get really huge opportunities, and there are so much more doorways opened to build a global business. So that's valuable.
End of video.
So Geeta, how would you characterize the current state that your company is in? And in a nutshell, how did you get there?
Well, in a nutshell, it took a lot of effort and a lot of research and adapting to the environment where I ended up. But the current state would be like we're right about to take off. So that's pretty exciting.
That's super exciting. Congratulations.
Yeah.
And Karim, to now introduce you, you have, if I remember correctly, an online platform for expats in the Netherlands so they can connect to each other. How would you describe your rise to the stage that your company is at right now?
Well, actually, I started off as a hobby, just doing events and meetups for expats, because it's hard to move to a new country with no friends and no network. So it started to grow as a hobby, and then we started to do bigger events and more events, and then we became also more online and with the pandemic, and we have articles and webinars. So that's kind of how we grew, and we got a lot of attention, and so people just started contacting us. And
amazing. Yeah. Let's also start, watch your video.
Cool.
My name's Karim Savary. I'm from Canada, and the name of my company is Expat Republic. We are an English media company based in the Netherlands, and we provide content and events and knowledge for expats to make their life fruitful and enjoyable while they're in the Netherlands, to help them also grow their network. In fact, it was a hobby. I noticed that a lot of expats were didn't have a lot of friends, they didn't have a network, so I stepped in and I enjoyed organizing events, so I just started doing loads of events and meetups to kind of help them not be lonely, essentially. We try and cover all walks of life for expatriates and internationals. So for instance, we will have a basics of investing webinar. We will have a seminar about buying your own home. We will just do drinks, like super easy, just so people can meet and connect and grow their personal and social network. So you want to kind of give them that feeling of being at home. The way we make money is very simple. It's a media company the same way a magazine makes money, with advertising. But the idea is it's a sort of smart advertising. It's helpful, it's knowledgeable. It's not inconvenient or intrusive. We really like to transfer knowledge to our audience or transfer something nice to them so that they have a good feeling, right? And so as a partner that will like to do that, to provide that to an international audience, we're the perfect vehicle for that. So for me, the Netherlands is an incredible place to be an entrepreneur. Loads of opportunities. Easy to do business in, very direct, very honest, very straightforward. Lots of opportunities, access to capital, access to labor force, good system in place that makes doing business very easy. And you can also do it in English.
End of video.
So Karim, are you also planning on professionalizing your business further?
Of course, we're always looking to grow. We're already quite professional, I would say. We're of course looking to grow and to expand to other European countries as well.
And are you also looking then to maybe turn it into a different legal structure?
Yeah, of course, that's probably something we should have done already, but everything has its time. So I just want to make sure that things are done in a structured way that works for us and that we can continue to grow with a good foundation properly.
So you are indeed looking to see maybe if you can change that.
Yes.
Because especially when starting a business, also growing a business, that legal structure can change. Mm-hmm. So that's a really important aspect that we will also dive in later on in this webinar. Thank you so much. But maybe before we dive into that deeper, Johan, could you explain to us what different legal structures there are in the Netherlands?
There are quite a few legal structures that you can choose from. I think the most well-known are the sole proprietorship, in Dutch called the eenmanszaak, which is the legal form most startup businesses choose when they register. But there are legal structures for partnerships, that's also possible. And you have the possibility to register a legal entity, most common being the liability company being the BV.
What is the main difference then between a sole proprietorship and a BV?
I think there's two. They're different when it comes to liability. As a one-man business, you're personally liable. As a legal entity, you're not. So that's a huge difference. On the other end, when it comes to taxes and you're a startup business, you might benefit just a little more from the sole proprietorship than you would as a legal entity.
So when should you review your legal structure in that case?
I'd say that once you start growing, the business starts increasing, there's more money going around, your liability becomes a bigger issue. You might want to start working with staff, all elements that increase your liability. That could be a point in which you make the change into a legal entity. And I would also say, look at taxes. Once you start paying too much taxes as a sole proprietor, I think that's going to be the cue from your accountant or your bookkeeper to make the change into a legal entity.
Yeah, so that, of course, would be a huge advantage to change.
Yeah,
are there other main advantages to switching to a BV?
Depends. If you go international, there could be an argument. Being a director of a legal entity in foreign countries is easier to explain than having a sole proprietorship. That could be one. And I'd say if you start working with investors, that's also then also a BV becomes more interesting because you can have investors who can have shares. And that's not possible if you have a sole proprietorship or a general partnership.
And how should an entrepreneur know when their business would actually qualify as a BV if it wants to take advantage of all of this?
I'd say that you'd normally have your accountant who's going to look at your bookkeeping. They're going to give you a cue. And I'd say that if you want to work with investors and scenarios like that, you'll find out that that's the only possibility. But keep in mind that it's not always necessary to change. You can start off as a one-man business or general partnership and change into a legal entity, but there are also a lot of people who don't and who stay sole proprietors or partnerships their entire business career.
Jetta, you actually started as a BV. Did you feel that as an advantage, and why did you choose for that?
Well, in my case, when I came to the Netherlands in 2016, I came as part of a business acceleration program. And this was the structure that they advised us from the very start. And we actually have a holding company owning the shares inside the BV. And then the investors come along and there's the whole stock. So it's a bit more sophisticated structure. Was it a good or a bad choice? I'm not sure. It worked for me so far. So I can't complain. But yeah.
So for you, it probably was a good choice at that point.
Yeah, in some ways, yes.
Yeah. And Johan, what will you say that the transition to BV is always a logical next step for sole proprietorship?
No. As I mentioned earlier, that for some it is. And I'd say based on the growing of your business and your liability increasing and profit increasing, that could be a reason to change. Having an investor on board could help making that transition. But for some, it goes from a sole proprietorship to a legal entity, and for a lot of others, it doesn't, and they're going to stay the exact same way as they start now. There's really, it's not mandatory. You don't need to go to a legal entity at some point. There's a choice, and the choice will depend on your specific situation and your needs.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We will come to talk about the tax situation of a sole proprietorship and a BV in the next chapter. For there's much more to this. But first, let's continue with a bird's eye view on the growing and expanding of your business.
Animation of a city.
Business is going well for Mike. He wants to expand. What are his options? Should he expand his product range, hire staff, start trading internationally? How about opening a branch office? Expansion comes with risks, and Mike needs to know what they are. Is there a market for his new products? Does he need extra insurance for international business or permits? Mike needs a growth plan to help him focus. He visits business.gov.nl, the point of single contact website that offers entrepreneurs complete and up-to-date government information. Here, he finds all he needs to know. The market research he has done is the input for his marketing plan. He knows which products show the most promise. Research into the national and international market has shown him where to focus his efforts. Next, he has to think about promotion. He needs to consider his target market to find the right mix of traditional and online marketing tools. Financing is an essential part of growing. Now that Mike knows what he wants to do, he needs to decide how to finance the expansion. Go for one source of funding or for a mixture. Market research, marketing, and finance. Those are the ingredients for a growth plan that will work. Mike knows how to move forward. And so can you, with a little help from business.gov.nl.
Johan, do you have a general recommendations for businesses when they think of growing?
I think that you'll be looking at what your plans were right from the beginning. I think that makes that's a nice starting point. Once you started your business, you had a plan, you had a vision, you had somewhere you wanted to go and where you wanted to end up with your business. I think it's always good to keep an eye on what your plans were. Are you still on track? Are you still going in the direction where you want to go? So for those who wrote a business plan, keep working with that specific plan. Look at what you were estimated on doing. And on top of that, you'll be looking into possibilities of growth. You might want to start writing a growing plan, saying that I'm here now, I'm still in line with what I intentionally planned. But how am I going to go to the next step? And you'll be thinking about expanding product, expanding market. You might want to look into hiring personnel, relocating, all that kinds of stuff is the next step. And that's the thing that you'll be thinking of.
Yes, exactly. So this growth plan actually is sort of key to first taking that next step.
Yeah.
What aspects would you deem are most important to be named in this growth plan?
I'd say that look at financing, look at staff maybe, look at your location, your legal structure maybe. I'd say that those elements are the things that you need to look into.
Sounds logical. Kareem, growth plan, does that ring a bell? Did you put anything on paper?
Of course I did, but you always have to refine things. It's about moving your business 1% per day. That's my motto.
Wow.
That's a good one. So any remarks to the growth plan that Johan just sketched?
Essentially, you do look at your growth plan. You do. We do put things on paper. We do take a look at, okay, what's the next logical step for us? I'm not a fan of keeping things super rigid, right? Because things always change on a day-to-day basis. As long as the general direction doesn't change, I think you're good.
That sounds very logical. And how do you make sure that everyone, and of course you, are able to keep focus in that case?
Well, it's very simple. You focus on your clients, and you, in our case, focus on our audience. So if you keep those two happy, you have to, keeping the focus is about keeping your customers and your stakeholders happy, essentially. And if you can do that, you're usually going to end up in the right way.
That sounds good. Mm-hmm. And in that case, are there also any special remarks for non-Dutch entrepreneurs?
Definitely. Well, the Netherlands is a really great place to do business. I would say just know the regulations, get to know what sort of company you want to start. And basically, because at the end of the day, a business is about having customers. So find your first customers. And it's quite easy to do in the Netherlands just because of the business-friendly environment. It's quite good, actually. So,
well, that's good to hear. That's good to hear.
I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, no, it answered it definitely. And now I would like to see what your strategy base is. So I have a statement for you.
Sure.
In the running of your business, you should always go after opportunities. Mm-hmm. Jetta, to maybe start with you.
Well, you should definitely seek opportunities, but you don't take all of them. You take the ones that work for you and in line with your planning and your business directions, because otherwise you just waste effort and then you're all over the place. So who needs that when you want to build something specific, right?
Do you agree with that, Karim?
Absolutely. Opportunities, it's always going for the right opportunities, but I don't agree with being opportunistic.
Yeah.
You see what I mean? It's really, it has to match with your overall vision, absolutely.
And you, Johan, as a business consultant, do you agree with the statement?
Yeah, they're both right, and it has to work for your situation. It needs to be you, your business, your planning, and you need to keep an eye open for possibilities, but in the end, it needs to suit your business, and they both make that happen. So yeah,
they
totally
agree. They certainly do. Yes, yeah. They certainly do. So Jetha, looking at opportunities, what is your next step with Baby Moon?
Well, right now, we have a lot of work to do on our plate because we're literally in the middle of launching on both our business directions, because we have a direction for consumer market and one for the health. So, but first of all, we have two parallel lines of work. So, and the team is small enough at this point, so we can't afford looking for opportunities that are not on our radar, that are maybe great and amazing and fantastic, but right at this point of where our business is, we have to put value to what all the pre-work that has been done, launch, get the goals that we were looking at, and then after that we can maybe take a phase of searching for an opportunity, for other opportunities, at a stage when we're kind of transitioning to another step.
Exactly. And I can imagine, especially with the team you're describing, financing and launching is really important in this.
Yeah.
But we can dive deeper into that later on. Great to hear that. Karim, maybe a question for you again. Mm-hmm. What is at the top of your list, the first thing you do once you actually are BV?
That's a good question. honestly, it really doesn't change much, to be honest, because I'm going to do the exact same thing I do every morning. I'm going to wake up and I'm going to think about my customers and the people I need to help. So the legal structure is kind of a transparent thing, and you probably want to just hand over all that accounting and tax stuff to someone who knows what they're doing. And of course, you can visit our website for those companies.
good to mention. Thank you. Let's summarize what we've discussed. The big picture of running a business and reviewing the legal structure because of the changes. You should write a growth plan and try to keep the focus on where you're going. You can find all the information you need on business.gov.nl.
Text on screen. Running your business. Growing in practice.
Managing your growth means focusing on several aspects. Taxes, for example. What changes in taxes when you become a BV? We will also discuss the possibilities of hiring staff. What type of employment suits your business best? And what will change? And we will take a look at financing. What types of financing are there in the Dutch financing landscape? We will discuss these topics with Johan Lafra of the Chamber of Commerce and our entrepreneurs, Jetha and Karim. Johan, with these different legal structures, there are different tax regulations.
Yeah,
how does that work differently?
And based on, I think for all legal entities, the one that you all have to work with is the VAT, in Dutch called the BTW, the value-added tax. That's something that works for every legal entity. The main difference is when it comes to income tax versus the corporate tax. That's the biggest difference between the personal entities and the legal structures.
Does anything changes in these taxes when you become a BV compared to the other legal structures?
Yeah, the one that isn't going to change is the VAT. That works the same for all of them. The biggest difference is that once you have a one-man business or a general partnership or the professional partnership, you pay income tax over all profit. And the difference with the legal entity, the BV, is that you'll be paying a salary, which should be what's normal in the market, but it needs to be at least 46,000 euros. That's money that you'll pay your income tax over, but on top of that, if there's more profit, you'll start paying your corporate tax. And that's the biggest difference between the personal entities and the legal structures.
So does that mean that if I would choose for BV, I would have to fill in two forms, both one for the income tax and one for the corporate tax?
Yeah, it's going to be two different tax systems. Yeah, so it's in addition to just the income tax as a sole proprietor.
Well, that's good to know at least. Yeah. And are there also tax reductions that entrepreneurs can use?
Yeah, it's those go for the one-man business and the partnerships. If you meet a certain criteria, you're entitled to all kinds of tax discounts. And those discounts won't apply if you have a legal structure. And that's normally the reason why your profit needs to increase on an annual basis before switching to a legal entity becomes interesting from a tax point of view.
Okay, so you would say that in becoming a BV, in a tax point of view, it would be a disadvantage, but especially if you're making more and more profit, those will weigh up against each other.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Are there any other deductions maybe for the other legal structures apart from the BV that these entrepreneurs could benefit from before?
I'd say that those are not part of the actual legal structure, but it depends on your activity. Once you start doing something, there might be subsidies or research and development things that you can use for your business. But those don't solely apply to just the legal form. It has to do what it is that you're doing. Yep.
That sounds logical.
Okay, that's good.
Well, in that case, let's start talking about hiring staff. Jeta, do you currently employ staff?
Yeah, we have a team of 8 right now. Well, that's the executives and the office team. And everyone is working on their own terms because we're still fundraising at this point. We have people who we hired for 0 hours, and then they get paid per number of hours they actually put in. But then there are people who are full-time, and they are very important to us for growth. And then there are people who we deal with externally and just do contract basis.
So you actually have quite a few different ways of employment.
Yeah.
Karim, do you also have these different ways of employment?
Essentially, we work mainly with freelancers, so writers, editors, marketeers, essentially, and no one is employed by us. We just have freelance contracts with them.
I'm sure that has its advantages and different structures. So maybe, Johan, you could enlighten us in a theory. What kind of different types of employment are there in the Netherlands?
There are so many ways to employ people. There's a scenario for each and every one. But I think that the biggest difference is you can hire someone as an employee directly, so put them on your payroll and then start working from there. I hear you saying something about zero-hour contracts, which is fine too. You still be their employer, but the amount of hours worked is variable. That's an option. You can hire people through temping agencies, through payrolling organizations, and you can even hire independents like freelancers or ZZP people. That's all possible. So you'll be looking at whatever works for you, and there's probably an option for that.
Of course, yes. That's what entrepreneurs should always keep in mind. What works best for me?
Yeah.
And maybe that's a great intro for the next statement I have for entrepreneurs. And the statement is, it is better to have fixed-term contracts than flexible ones. And I feel you might both have a different answer to that. But Karim, let's start with you.
I'm a big fan of flexibility, so you know my answer.
I figured that would be the case. Will that differ maybe when you become a BV in the future?
Yes and no. We just need to see how the growth plan goes and what the resources and skills we'll need. It's all about what's available readily on the market. So I can imagine that we will. Need that. Based as the company grows, we will need new skill sets in the business. So
that sounds logical. And Jeta, I believe from your story, you had several types.
Well, it really depends on who we're talking with and what's the type of work that they are putting in. And like, for example, when there are things related to intellectual property, because we have a lot of innovation to what we're doing. So there are probably rigid terms that we would impose. But on the other hand, having flexibility in our collaboration with anyone who work with us, I think it's pretty important, because you can't just be a woodpecker about this.
That's true.
No, and especially when you're talking about IP, it's really important, of course.
Yeah.
So there's not one which you particularly would prefer.
No, I mean, it's situational. You have to adapt to the situation, to the task at hand.
So when you started Baby Moon in the beginning, did you start with the flexible ones or the fixed-term ones?
Well, when I started with exploring where I landed, let's put it this way, and it took a while. And at that stage, there was a lot of research development done by me mostly. But then when I had to get people to do something for the company, then it would be a short-term, like, task-based agreement, and it was limited. Now at the point when we have people on an ongoing basis being as part of the team and doing the Monday meetings and all of that with a stable team, it's a bit different. But still, we keep the flexibility, and we still have people from outside the company also providing input. So it's a matter of, right now, it's a matter of like managing what's on the inside and then all those satellite supporters that we have. So
it sounds like a colorful bunch together. Would you do you have any advice for the entrepreneurs at home, how they could choose what would be best suit their company?
I would think just to know exactly the requirements they have for the people they hire, and based on those requirements, adapt the way they hire them.
I think that's a good advice.
It's best to know what you want in up front. So
then maybe a quick theoretical question for Johan again. Can a sole proprietor also hire staff?
Yeah, that's possible.
Yes?
Yeah, that's possible.
Is that possible in any legal structure?
The sole proprietor only says something about the number of owners of the actual business. So there's going to be one owner. As a partnership, you'll have multiple owners. As a legal entity, both can apply. But it only has to do with ownership, and both can have employees, and in all scenarios that we just mentioned.
And I can imagine, of course, when you actually employ these people on fixed terms, these are probably having financial consequences. Could you tell us a bit more about that?
Once you hire someone, then they become your employee. At that point, you need to set up an administration. There's payroll taxes that need to be done, that need to be set in motion. For some, it's fine to do yourself. I hear a lot of people saying that now I start working with personnel, the first thing I'm going to do is hire myself a bookkeeper or an accountant to make sure that payroll taxes are taken care of the way it should be. But in the end, you'll have to do with employer stuff. And
You touch upon a really important point there, because of course there are many regulations and rules around that. So yeah. What would you say are the most important employment contract terms and condition in the Netherlands here that you should be aware of?
Well, it depends on the contract that you're going to set up. Will you be setting up someone for, let's say, 40 hours a week for the rest of their life? That's a different scenario than when you start working with people on a zero-hour contract. So that's the first thing that you need to look at. What kind of agreement am I going to set up? And once you do, there's all kinds of stuff. You'll be paying your employer wages for your personnel, the salary that's required. Most of the time, people actually want to earn some money. And you'll be paying some benefits on top of that as an employer. So that's important. But there's all kinds of, as I just said, there's the minimum wage that you need to take care of. You need to set something in place for holidays and stuff like that. There's pension, there's insurances that need to be covered. All those elements combined make the official contract.
That's quite a bunch of rules and regulations to be aware of.
There is,
So, Kariba and Jeta, are any of these Dutch rules that we have here, did they come as a surprise? Were they different to what you were used to?
Well, I worked here already for quite a few years, so there was a lot of stuff that I knew about the system. So it was a little bit easier for me, in that sense.
And for you, Jeta?
No, I think these are all points that are valid and relevant wherever you do business, so you have to keep all of that in mind. On the other hand, if I compare just the paperwork processes here, it is much less complicated than in Eastern Europe where I come from. But then the fact that it's simplified has to make you a bit more aware of what you're putting into that contract. because when you're just winging it, that's not a good idea ever. So at times it's actually good to have a possibility to have an advisor, to ask someone for their professional input. If you feel that you're not qualified well enough to build the contract yourself.
True.
Because sometimes you can just not be aware of some aspects, and then that can bite you later on.
Yes, that's good. It's good that you mention it, because just to sort of close this off, are there any other more aspects that our entrepreneurs should know when working with staff, Johan?
I'd say that always start at the beginning, as already mentioned by our two guests today, is that what it is that you're looking for. And if you have a very clear picture of what the future is going to look like, it's going to be much easier to hire someone directly for a longer period. So look at the coming months, maybe the first 1-2 years. See where you're planning on going, and based on that, you can make the right choice regarding your staff. So have a clear picture. It applies to every segment today.
Yes.
have a clear picture of where you want to go.
Think about it and have a clear picture.
That's true.
And then you can start with your staff.
That's true.
And I can imagine you have staff and your employees. They have to work somewhere. Do you have an office space at the moment, Jetta?
Yeah, we do have an office space. I'm very excited about that because we moved to the office just a few months back. So it's really exciting that the people can come. There is this point that a big part of our team works remotely because they're not located in the Netherlands. We have people in Switzerland, we have people in Tanzania, we have people in Moldova, so it's pretty international.
And how did you find them, actually, if they're from all over the world?
It took a while.
Do you use LinkedIn, or how do you find them?
It's some people, yes. Someone actually I found on LinkedIn. Others, it was just a matter of engaging the networks that I have, me and then the other people involved. And it doesn't have to be LinkedIn necessarily, it's just a network is a network, it's just human connection.
Yeah, so that's the biggest part probably, a good network and through that finding the right employees.
Yeah.
Is that the same way you do it, Karim, with your freelancers?
Actually, it's a little bit yes, in some way yes. The thing is, we already have a huge following. I mean, we have close to 110,000, 115,000 followers as expats living and working in the Netherlands. So for us to recruit talent is, we just use our own network. Already people come to us and solicit us, hey, can I write for you? Can I work with you? So,
oh, wow.
I've had that luxury, actually, so that's great. And I have some incredible people on my team that I'm really proud of, and it's been really a nice journey. So
actually, it once again then comes down to network, but in this case, the fact that everyone knows you instead of you know everyone.
Luxe problem, as they say in Dutch.
Because for Jetta, for you again then with hiring staff, what are actually the most important aspects you look at when hiring a new person?
At this point of the development of the company, we're definitely looking at people who can deal with uncertainty. Uncertainty is not necessarily a 2020 thing, especially when you're dealing with startups and innovation. We're looking at people who can self-organize and can be goal-driven, and that's probably a common denominator that we're looking at, but then also having good background in the specific work that they are doing. That's important.
No, that's really important. Look what they've done and see if they can build on from there in your company.
Yeah.
I believe we've got quite a lot of tips for entrepreneurs regarding hiring. So let's go to financing. Johan, could you elaborate a bit more on the types of financing there are in the Netherlands?
You can ask friends and family. I think that's the easiest one. There's microcredits that you can apply for. There's bank loans. There's investors that you can get into your business. I'd say that for every scenario, there's a possibility to gain money somewhere.
Quite a few number of ways to get to financing. Maybe it's interesting in that case to have a statement for entrepreneurs again. And the statement this time is, I recommend looking for funding.
It depends.
Of course, it depends.
It depends, because once you take in financing from somewhere else, there are restrictions and terms to that financing. To that financing, do you actually need the funds? Because raising money for the sake of raising money, without a purpose, and you see a lot of entrepreneurs, they get their pitch deck really good to, oh, I raised so much, but in reality, in my view, the best investor is a paying customer.
That's very true. Geeta, how do you look at this?
Well, I agree with Karim completely. So there are, like, most of the times it's best to have the paying customer. But then on the other hand, like, when you have to deal with, like, in my case, because we have all the research and development, because we're dealing with electronic textile and things that are, like,
a physical product.
Well, aside from being a physical product, it's also innovation, and it's not something that's common and widespread. You have to fund the innovation in various ways. You have to figure it out how to build it, because it's a long process, because you have to build it, you have to certify it, blah, blah, blah. So the good opportunity here is actually the possibility to fund R&D. Because there are a bunch of subsidies for that. There are a bunch of grant opportunities. There are even loans that are non-dilutive, so then you can still keep the ownership of your company. But then again, you can also have access to venture capital, which is a useful tool. Yeah. But again, it depends very much on what you're doing.
Because if I remember correctly, you are currently in the process of funding, right?
Yes.
How did you get to the choice of which funding you were going for?
In my case, aside from the fact that we have a lot of R&D in our company, I still have a physical product that is already there and ready for market release, because the innovative version, well, they are all innovative, but the electronic connected versions, they still have to go through, like, a lot of work. But we have a product ready for release to market, which means that I can have my company income and I can have paying clients on top of the R&D part. So that's a specific of my company, because I have colleagues in the startup world who only have the R&D for the first 3 years, and they can't generate income.
So you really looked for R&D funding in the beginning?
We are looking for R&D funding at this point as well, but so, yeah.
And how did you know how to find this R&D funding? Did you have a network again of venture capitalists?
That was a process. that was a challenge. To be honest, I had 3 years that were really, really financially, we had to go through a very tight belt, let's put it this way, period.
The bootstrapping phase.
Oh, yeah. But then again, it wasn't easy. But on the other hand, I think it's important not to take in funding before you know where you're going, before you can handle it as a company. So, yeah, we had to explore, so we took our moment there.
Well, that's really good advice.
But then, we also took that time period to explore the possibilities for funding. Because here, the Netherlands does give you a lot of opportunities that are on a spectrum. Like, you can literally go from subsidies, from grants and loans and da-da-da-da. So aside from just the money coming in, you have to also take into account, like, do you want to keep shares in your company? Do you want to deal with other people telling you how to run your business? Do you want to put an effort and pay out loans? So
of course, yes.
You have to have a funding strategy.
Yes.
Not just like, oh, there's cash, let's go for it.
So I can imagine that this strategy, of course, had to be written up in a written plan for when you were looking for this funding.
Yeah, well, you have to put things on paper, because when you go to any funding organization, they will not give you the money just for the pretty eyes.
That's true. That's very true.
Yeah, you have to turn it into a document. But before you put it on paper, you have to know what you're putting on paper. And then you have to do the research before that. So it's a backtracking thing.
Karim, do you recognize this situation? I mean, do you have entrepreneurs in your network network that are looking for funding like this?
Yeah, sure. We see it all the time. And what's actually interesting in the Netherlands is there's actually like advisors that can actually go and help you raise money. Yeah. Of course, they take
for a fee.
For a price, of course. But that's a profession that's readily available to help people raise money. So we're quite lucky setting up businesses in the Netherlands, actually.
Would you advise entrepreneurs looking right now to also look at one of these coaches?
Yeah, absolutely.
Definitely.
100%.
Johan, can you also relate to the answers Geta and Karim just gave?
I was wondering, did any of you contact me in the because we as an organization as well can help in the early process of getting the possibilities out and maybe even refer you in a certain direction. But yeah, I totally agree with what was just told. And again, keep an eye out for what it is that you need. I think that's a very valuable point. It's not just about raising as much capital as you want and can, but there's a need. And that needs to be clear. And once you know that, you can decide which way you're going to go. And that makes it a lot easier to write down all the necessary paperwork. Mm. So I totally agree. Yeah.
That's good to hear. Then the advice can be followed. We have been looking at taxes for entrepreneurs and what changes when you become a BV. And we looked at the forms of employment in the Netherlands and the things that you should take into account when you start hiring staff. If you want to know more about financing your business, we recommend you watch our webinar on this specific topic. There, you learn all about the Dutch financial climate and preparing to apply for Dutch funding, and more about financing options in the Netherlands we discussed briefly today. You find this at our website, business.gov.nl.
Text on screen, running your business. What else?
In the last part of this webinar, we take a closer look at some important business processes, such as digitization and cybersecurity. And how do you prepare if you want to expand your Dutch business internationally? We will conclude with the advice that our guests have for you as an entrepreneur with a growing business. Johan, we've talked about taxes, about staff and financing. What are the really important processes that you should look at as an entrepreneur for growing your business?
I'd say that it's actually the two things that you just mentioned. The world becomes more and more digital these days. There's a new privacy law in place with a lot of requirements that you need to meet. The AVG in Dutch, GDPR in English. That's really something that has been here for the last last few months, last year. So that's really something to take into consideration. There's cybercrime these days that becomes more and more that's more here than it was a few years ago. So be careful with what you do digitally to avoid those scenarios. I think that's an important thing. And and also once you start growing international, I think that's a huge topic to talk about.
Yes, I can imagine, especially through part that digitization, your work has changed a bit in the last few years.
Yeah, it has, yeah.
So maybe asking our entrepreneurs then, I mean, these aspects that Johan just mentioned, do you pay attention to those as well, Karim?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Sorry.
Absolutely, yeah. Essentially, yeah, in terms of cybersecurity, it's something that you have to invest in and be careful. I mean, we can see it when there's attacks and stuff on our website. Additionally, in terms of digitization, yeah, the COVID pandemic has forced us to do only webinars now. So unfortunately, we're not doing in-person events for a while. And the data privacy, yes, you have to respect all the rules. Tell people what you're doing with their data and get their consent. All these aspects are very real in today's world.
Yes, and they're becoming more real by the day.
Yes, especially the digitization, just because of the situation.
So. Yeah, and Geta, I mean, especially because you use electronics in your product, I can imagine that it also...
First of all, you definitely can't avoid, you can't pretend that these regulations don't exist and not take them into account. Definitely a lot of the parts of the business are going online and you have to go digital and... many aspects, even if you have a physical product. because there is the communication and the interaction with your client, and that's one of the main stakeholders anyway when you're doing a business. But then when we're talking electronics and doing, like, I do have to deal with sensors, and of course it's still in development. Of course, it has to go through certification processes, but in our design process, we keep that in mind. So it's getting secured by design in terms of how we're developing the software.
Yeah.
Because it's very sensitive information, because we're looking at the health of infants. So, like, yeah, it can't go any more intimate than that.
Especially, so you don't only have to look at digitization for your company, but also for
yeah.
the product.
Yeah.
So you have it both ways.
Yeah.
Good luck with trying to figure that out then.
Well, we're taking our time.
Good. Smart. Yeah. Smart plan. Because other than just digitization, Johan, what other advice would you give entrepreneurs who are thinking of taking their Dutch business abroad?
Look at the potential market where you're planning on going. Look at is there a need for the product that you're providing? Do you have the necessary market knowledge of that specific country, or will you be needing local people to help you to get it up and running? I think those elements are very important, and I guess that in your case, actually coming from another country, that's helpful. You'll probably have your network, people who can help you gain access to the foreign market. So use that, use your network. And if you don't have one yourself, there's all kinds of international networks that you can hook up with. The Enterprise Europe Network, for one, is one that can actually help you launch a product in a different country.
Yes, a really important one. Good that you mentioned it, Joan. This webinar is too short for all the information. But on business.gov.nl, you find all the information you need, along with specific tips for finding customers and business partners. For example, the Netherlands Enterprise Agency offers the Business Partner Scan to quickly provide you with an overview of potential business partners in your chosen country. So Geeta, which other markets apart from the Netherlands are you looking at?
Well, actually, we're looking at Scandinavia for a bunch of reasons, and we have connected with a distribution company there for the consumer market. But then for the health part of the business, we are looking right now, because we are tackling infant mortality, so we looked at a region that has that specific problem, and that's why we are going to Tanzania, and, well, we are launching there.
That's amazing to be launching, especially.
Yeah,
there,
we're launching our initial study in a hospital there, because we're making a tool for preventing neonatal mortality. But also on top of that, because of the nature of work that we're doing, I had actually really good support from the Dutch government in connecting the business to the United Nations programs. And that was super valuable. I can't state the value of that.
Wow. So what does that bring you then?
So literally, when was it, last year? There was, I had the connection with the RVO officer who is in charge of connecting Dutch companies to the UN programs. And then I became part of this procurement seminar with the United Nations. I joined the Dutch delegation to Copenhagen to the...
Wow,
yeah.
That's quite amazing.
So then we got to register as a supplier for the United Nations, which is a really high value opportunity
yes.
for a company like mine.
That's good to know that these type of connection can come from that.
Yeah, exactly.
So Karim, looking 3 years into the future, what will your goals be, and maybe in connection with, of course, the government that can take you there?
Well, honestly, we're looking to just continue to grow, and of course, grow to other countries as well. yeah, the whole system in the Netherlands is very supportive for entrepreneurship, from, you know, just having access to capital, having access to labor force, having access to information, and everything readily available in English as well. So, and it's just the whole business mindset, I think, in this whole infrastructure that we call the Netherlands is super helpful. So.
So that was actually one of the easiest aspects, because it's so set up in the Netherlands.
It's just super easy. It's really incredible.
Well, that's good to hear, of course. And in retrospect, if that was one of the easiest and best parts, what was one of the biggest challenges you had to overcome?
In all honesty, when I started doing this, I just did it out of love and out of kindness to help people, but that doesn't pay the bills. So, just to know that I had a business and what to do to make it a successful business that it is today, that was really the challenge. Finding what I need to do. And that's the thing, is knowledge and knowing what you need to do is probably, in my opinion, the most valuable thing.
Yes.
It's more valuable than money. It's more valuable than a lot of things, so.
And I think it's also good for entrepreneurs at home to hear that you don't have to start off with huge capital, but you first off with a passion,
that's
your driving force.
Yeah.
Because Geeta, in retrospect for you as well, what was your biggest challenge in starting Baby Moon?
Well, my biggest challenge was it wasn't a challenge. It was just a process that took a lot of time and effort. It was figuring out the landscape. Because I did come to the Netherlands and I was in the program. The program was done with. And then it took a while to set up a network here specifically. And because I'm pretty niche, it took a while before I found the right people.
Is it something that you would do something in differently if you, looking back at it?
I don't think so.
No. Like in finding the right people that you say, oh, if I would have known this,
like,
then.
For example, it's just, yeah, I can't blame. This is not something to put blame on, but I have a pretty good knowledge of the international landscape of the baby carrier world, and I am fluent in Romanian, English, and Russian, but I didn't know Dutch, so it was. But this is a market-specific situation. So I came here, and I was looking for like baby carriers in the Netherlands, and I found nothing. And then I would ask people in the program, like, but they were business-related people, so they had no network to that. So it took me actually over a year, because I didn't know the language, and I didn't have the local network connections. But in the end, I have done that. Maybe, yeah. It would have been nice if I did that faster, but that's that. That's how things are.
Yeah, some of the processes take time. Yeah. And it's also good to know that this language barrier
is a thing. It just turns out that the specific language in the niche that I'm working is very different in Dutch than it was. But this is a case-specific situation.
So, Karim, did you also have a language barrier problem?
I speak Dutch.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, so you didn't have that.
But actually, because I'm kind of catering to an international audience and my clients are catering to that same audience, all their communication is done in English. So it's actually really authentic when I'm just speaking in my native tongue. But no, I mean, I can read it. It's basic Dutch is helpful, but it's not mandatory to have a successful business in the Netherlands. I can name you tons of expats that I know that have crazy successful businesses. And their Dutch is niet zo best.
But that's good to hear, especially because we're also talking about expanding our business internationally. That the language barrier, of course, in some specific cases could be a thing. But usually, I mean, English is quite well-bred spoken. So how do you think, Karim, first off, you will be able to manage your international growth in the upcoming years?
With calm and serenity, meditation and breathing. It's all about having good people around you. It really is that. I cannot stress the fact, have the people you click with, people you can trust, people you can rely on, and you know, you give the trust and you just do your best and focus on your clients and the people you work with.
Would you agree with that,
Geeta?
Yeah,
definitely.
Is there also maybe a difference when you're going and broadening your view internationally when you're looking for funding?
Well, you always have to work with the people you click with, like wherever you go. because otherwise it's just eating you up. Like, you can't.
That's very true. Yes, like, that's
you don't
good
want
to. Mention.
If you want to achieve your goal, you can't afford. You can't afford putting yourself under stress and. Like, you don't throw yourself under the bus. You have to manage the business, but you also have to manage your own state and your own sanity and health so that you can be in a good shape for the time when you achieve that goal you're working towards. So it's important.
Yes, so the people around you are most important, both working with, but also your funding partners.
Yeah.
That we should really keep in mind. So, Karim, we've heard you talking, of course, about your Expat Republic, the walking network, where you were able to connect people and move on. But I was really interested, how did you find people that help you?
Actually, the same way, via, through people that I know or through our own network. So literally, when I need help with something, I ask my community.
So hey. Expat Republic.
Yeah. And so that already is so wide that I can get a lot of reach and get the help that I need. Just, it's all about being transparent and say, hey, I need this help. And it, you know, you put out positivity into the world, it comes back to you. It's really is that simple.
So would that also be your advice for all the entrepreneurs watching at home right now?
Yes, definitely. Try and connect with as many people as you can. Go to networking events, join different expat Facebook groups, join Dutch groups, you know, local community, get involved, get to know people, ask around. There is a culture in the Netherlands, a very entrepreneurial culture about helping one another, and that's very deeply rooted in the culture. So it was quite easy for me to get a lot of help. It's just that business trading mindset is so omnipresent. So we're very lucky.
And I can imagine that's different in other countries. So would that advice be different if you look outside of Netherlands?
I think on a general level, there's a lot of commonality around the world. People are generally good people and want to help. I just find that the whole business and trade is so ingrained in the Dutch culture, also historically. So I think just the ease of doing these things, and it's also very efficient, and everything is very well structured. So it's not so much like the structure here is really good when you compare it to other countries. That's really the main thing.
Well, that's good to hear.
Yeah,
glad we are here.
Yeah, thank you.
Geeta, do you have a last bit of advice for the entrepreneurs in how to take that next step?
That next step. Well, just keep going and find your goal and then work towards it. And then if it's too much, then ask for help and again, you have to keep in mind that the business is not necessarily forever. So if it doesn't work, do not hesitate to stop. Do not hesitate to restart. Do not hesitate to restructure. Because that's how entrepreneurship works.
And always, if I understand you correctly, remember what your passion is and keep going for that.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you all for your contributions to this webinar today. So we can conclude that when your business is up and running and even growing, it becomes important to look at issues such as data protection. For you get to deal with the General Data Protection Regulation, the GDPR, or in Dutch, the AVG. And when you're looking to expand your business across the borders, you should do research on the best markets for your products or services. Last but not least, we've seen the importance of a good network and the challenges of keeping your eyes on the future. We hope you all manage to stay focused. We've come to the end of this webinar. We hope this has been an inspiration for you as an entrepreneur running your business in the Netherlands. For more information, please visit our website, business.gov.nl. Thank you for watching. Good luck with your business, and we hope to welcome you at our next webinar.
Scrolling on screen text, business.gov.nl. Text on screen, government information for entrepreneurs. Text on screen. Thank you for watching.